The last matter on our oral calendar this morning is the case of Haley Kitta versus Corey Strecker. Council, you each have 15 minutes for your oral argument this morning. If you'll please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral argument, and the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And feel free to adjust the podium to fit your height.
Good morning. May it please the court and council. I'm Matt Barber, here for the appellant, Haley Kitta. This is a straightforward statutory interpretation case. Ms. Kitta is asking this court to be consistent in its application of well-settled rules of statutory interpretation, and apply those rules to the subject statute, 549.04 subdivision 1. I'm going to call it subdivision 1. And if the court does that, is consistent in its application, it must reverse the district court because the district court's interpretation violates all these rules of interpretation. Ms. Kitta is also asking this court to reverse the district court's award of attorney's fees because there's no basis for that award. There was no statutory or contractual basis for it, and the procedures under Rule 11 and 549.211 were not followed. So first, the standard of review for interpreting subdivision 1. Generally, review of costs is abuse of discretion, but when you review the statute that authorizes costs, it's de novo. That's the Duckowitz case. It's right on point because it analyzes subdivision one.
Can I ask you this? Because I is this a case of first impression? I'm looking at, and the only case I'm aware of in Minnesota that really hits this directly is an unpublished case, the Headwaters Rural Utility Association versus City Corcoran case. Am I correct?
I believe that's correct. I don't know of any case that has made these arguments about this statute,
And that case is not binding on us because, number one, it's unpublished, but it may be persuasive. But one thing, and I noticed it was written by Judge Wright when she was on the court, that she seems to indicate that the word incur seems to drive the statute. And since it was a liability on behalf of that person, in this case it would be the defendant here, it would have been a liability on his behalf, that is sufficient to allow the cost of disbursements. Why was that reasoning wrong?
Yeah, there are 2 points for that. In a standard liability insurance policy, the insured is never responsible for the litigation costs. That's why they pay the premiums for it, and that's what we show in State Farm's policy here. And that's true in any insurance liability policy. The insurer needs the freedom to figure out how to defend the case. They wouldn't tie it to the insured's economic status. They look at what is their exposure, what's the policy limit, and what is the viability of the defense. If they tied it to the insured's economic status, then cases would settle because they couldn't foot the cost of an expensive defense on the merits.
Yes, but, I mean, you've argued here about, I mean, your main argument is that the insured doesn't pay these expenses.
Right, and that gets to the plain meaning of incur.
And that therefore there's a third party involved, but you know, I was thinking about this, and most personal injury cases, the injured person doesn't pay those costs either. It's the attorneys that front those costs.
Couldn't that
same argument be made relative to the plaintiff, injured party's costs and disbursements?
No, Your Honor. Under a regular personal injury plaintiff's retainer agreement, the injured person is responsible for costs, becomes liable for them only if they prevail on the merits.
Okay. But so there's a contract there, right?
Right.
That, well, isn't the insured party that's the alleged tortfeasor, don't they also have a contract that they are liable for it unless, you know, so long as, unless they have coverage? And if for some reason they don't cooperate or they don't have coverage, then the insurance company can say, hey, this is all yours.
But coverage was not at issue here.
Well, I know.
And when coverage is at issue, the insurance company could be a party to the action.
Well, you've made a very broad argument about it. You have to show that the actual person paid, you know, the actual party actually paid each and every cost before it can be assessed.
Not necessarily paid or incurred.
Well, and but then you get into the definition of incurred,
right?
And according to this decision by Judge Wright in the Headwaters case, incurred means it's a liability of that person.
Right, it means to become responsible for.
It may be subsidized or paid for by another entity, but it's still that person's liability under the law.
Not in a standard liability issue or liability insurance policy. Mr. Strecker is never responsible for the cost that State Farm incurred on his behalf.
But he would have been had he not had insurance to cover it.
Well, correct? Then he would have had to pay or incur those costs, and that simply didn't happen here. The only thing he paid or incurred was his insurance policy, and that's not a recoverable, or his insurance premium, and that's not a recoverable cost under the statute. And this statute's in derogation of the common law. We construe it strictly, and we don't stretch it beyond its plain language. And it doesn't include these costs that were incurred by State Farm here, because State Farm was not a party. It could not be a party because we're not a direct action state. If State Farm wanted to, or I guess in another case, in an underinsured motorist case or a no-fault case or a coverage case against the insurer, they would be a party to the action. They could tax those costs that they paid or incurred because they're actually part of the action if they prevail. But here, State Farm hides behind Mr. Strecker. We can't talk about State Farm at trial. Incurs all these costs, and then when Ms. Kitta loses at trial, taxes them against her. That's not what the statute provides for. The statute provides the prevailing party must pay or incur the costs. Corey Strecker didn't do that here. There's nothing in the record that shows that.
Well, and there's other cases, too, involving Rule 68, when there's an offer made and the plaintiff doesn't recovers less from the jury than the offer, then there's a right to attorney's fee, to the cost and disbursements, right?
Correct.
And that goes to the insurance company because it's this, I mean, it's clearly an offer made by the insurance company, and there's been a number of cases where that has been those costs and disbursements, even though they're clearly being paid by the insurance company, the offer was made by the insurance company, those have been upheld by our court, right?
I don't know that they've addressed these strict construction arguments, though, and that's a rule made by the Minnesota Supreme Court. It's not the legislature acting in derogation of the common law, but I think the same rules of construction would apply to Rule 68. So if these arguments were made about Rule 68, then we'd have a different decision, possibly.
Well, and I'm just
and rule, I don't think Rule 68 has the catering.
So that the benefits of Rule 68 would be basically rendered unavailable then? I mean, is that what you're arguing? Because it's an offer. I mean, doesn't that run counter to what the benefit of making that offer would be, is that you get those costs and disbursements back? I mean, wouldn't that hurt the settlement atmosphere if you make that kind of a if we adopt your theory here?
It could, but this case isn't about Rule 68, so I'm not as up to date on the express language of Rule 68. And because it would be in derogation of the common law, we have to look at its express language of it. But under 54904, we know who the prevailing party is. It's the person who prevails on the merits and in whose favor the judgment is entered. That's Corey Strecker. He's never responsible or liable for any of these costs because he paid his insurance premium. That's why he's not entitled to tax any of these costs against Ms. Kitta. I don't believe Rule 68 has that exact language or those constructions that have been placed on it, like the Borchert case, who tells us who the prevailing party is and Duckowitz that says the prevailing party must pay or incur the costs.
But is in any case where there is a prevailing party, that party is entitled to costs and disbursements. That is the law.
That's correct.
But yet you're asking us to exclude any tortfeasors who may happen to have insurance from that that right.
That's because they're not paying or incurring any of the costs that are being taxed.
The statute doesn't say that. Why would we tag on extra verbiage to a statute?
What verbiage, Your Honor?
Well, except when the insurance company pays or except when...
The statute says that reasonable costs, or that the prevailing party shall be allowed reasonable costs paid or incurred. It does not mention insurance company. If it wanted to include insurance...
It says paid or incurred, and what I'm getting at is you're asking us to extend that by saying, except when they are not paid for by the prevailing party. I mean, that's kind of what you want.
No, that's the plain meaning of incurred, and it's the Duckowitz interpretation that the prevailing party must pay or incur those costs in order to tax them. That's the Minnesota Supreme Court.
What does pay mean?
Pay means to exchange money for goods or services.
Well, and doesn't incurred mean to have a liability, that this is an expense incurred on behalf of this alleged tortfeasor?
Incurred and incurred on behalf of are different. Incurred means to be liable for, and Mr. Strecker's never liable for these under the insurance policy.
But if he wasn't insured, or if he lost his coverage, he would be responsible, correct?
If he did pay or incur those costs, if he satisfies the plain language of the statute,
could I give you another example? Because I was thinking about how this would work. Because, I mean, honestly, I appreciate your argument. It's a creative argument. But what about if you have a parent with an 18-year-old kid who gets sued, and then the kid prevails, but mom and dad clearly pay all the expenses of litigation.
Right. If they've
got... Are you claiming in that case that since that kid never paid anything, it's an adult kid?
I just want to clarify that hypothetical. There's no insurance involved in that case. Mom and dad are fronting 100% of the kid's costs, correct? There's no insurance involved?
So this only applies to insurance companies, this third-party theory?
It only applies when the insured is not responsible for those costs. So when the mom and dad paying for the kid's costs, if they have an agreement that says, if you prevail, we get our costs back, or regardless of if you prevail or not, we get the costs back,
don't you think
that'd
that's
be enforceable.
A legislative prerogative, though? If you want 54904 to be stretched to say paid or incurred, except when an insurance company is involved, isn't that something the legislator should do? So that, I mean, you're arguing not fair, she didn't incur it, but to me that seems like that's something that should be cut out or crafted over there, not here.
I'm not stretching it at all. Because we're not a direct action state, the insurance company could never be a party to this, so it could never be a prevailing party.
But I mean that costs and disbursements are awarded except if there's an insurance company involved. I mean, that would prohibit then insurance companies coming into the mix.
The plain language limits it. It says paid or incurred, and when the prevailing party doesn't pay or incur the costs.
It doesn't say paid or incurred except when it's not paid by you.
Right. It does say the Duckowitz.
It's in words. I think we all understand what each other is saying, but I'm trying to figure out how this could best take place.
I believe the plain language of it, given that we're not a direct action state, prevailing party could never be State Farm in this case, and State Farm paid or incurred these costs, not the prevailing party. So the way it's written is the prevailing party must pay or incur the costs in order to tax them. That's what Duckowitz says. Because the prevailing party here, Corey Strecker, didn't pay or incur any of these costs and is never liable for any of the costs, he is not entitled to tax them against Ms. Kidda.
Then we should add the word personally paid or incurred. If we added personally, prevailing party, blah, 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 whatever costs and disbursements personally incurred, that would fix everything then.
I don't believe we need that word because Duckowitz is clear. The prevailing party must pay or incur the costs, and that didn't happen here. I believe Justice Strauss wrote Duckowitz, and he's very careful with his words, and when he wrote that, that's what he meant, and that's what the statute says. I can move on to the to the attorney's fees because I've got a quick minute. But again, there's no basis for that. There was no contract or statute that authorized it, and the procedures weren't followed. So that was a clear abuse of discretion, and that should be reversed. So unless the court has any questions, that's all I've got. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Kim Scriver and I represent respondent Corey Strecker. In this case, there is no question that Corey Strecker incurred the costs on his for his defense in this case. Statute 549.04 uses the words paid or incurred. And I think the important point to make about appellant's position here is appellant is saying that because Corey Strecker himself did not pay for these costs, he is not entitled to them. But I think that interpretation ignores the word incurred in the statute. And in staffing specifics, this court actually did provide a definition of the word incurred in statute 549.04. The court stated that it was an unambiguous term and it means to become liable or subject to expenses. Corey Strecker incurred expenses on his for his defense in this case. He chose to finance those costs, those expenses, by purchasing insurance, but the statute doesn't call for any sort of distinction about how a party chooses to finance the costs that they incur in a case. And so I think staffing specifics, in addition to the Headwaters case, is also on point here and is instructive. In staffing specifics, it was still a third party paying for the prevailing defendant's costs and disbursements. And the court stated that the prevailing parties, the prevailing defendants, even though they didn't specifically pay for the costs, they were still incurred on those parties' behalf. Therefore, they were entitled to them under the statute. So in addition to Headwaters, I think the staffing specifics case is also very on point and should be followed in this case.
I assume an insurance company isn't going to pay for any expense that the insured isn't liable for.
Correct, and that is what the court in Headwaters stated. So to say here today that Corey Strecker did not incur these costs is to say he's not liable for those costs or disbursements. If he weren't liable for costs and disbursements, his insurance company wouldn't be paying for them. And again, insurance was the way Corey Strecker decided to fund his costs and disbursements and any damages he would have owed in this case. But how he chose to finance everything in the end should make no difference, and there is no difference under the statute. So really, the Headwaters opinion, although it isn't unpublished, it is, again, persuasive. It's the exact situation that we have here. And again, it interprets that word incurred. So does the staffing specifics case. And they are both very instructive. And I think, again, the important thing is this appellant's position here today ignores the word incurred, ignores the definition of that, and just focuses on the word paid. Because Corey Strecker didn't actually pay these costs, he's not entitled to them. But the statute says paid or incurred. And separate, different meanings have to be given to both of those terms. I would also like to briefly just address the jurisdiction issue that respondent has raised. So in this case, judgment in this matter was entered on October 1st, 2018, and this case was not appealed by appellant until well after 60 days of that. And in addressing this jurisdiction issue, I think it's important to look at Rule of Civil Procedure 58, and then also Rule 104.02. Rule 58 states that entry of judgment shall not be delayed for the taxation of costs, and the omission of costs shall not affect the finality of the judgment. Rule 104.02 states that time to appeal from the judgment pursuant to this section shall not be extended by the subsequent insertion therein of costs and disbursements. And so I think it's important to look at what the district court was doing after October 1st, 2018, and the only thing the district court did was insert costs and disbursements. There is a purported judgment from the district court in March of 2019, but it's not clear that there is any authority to enter a judgment at that point, because again, after October 1st, 2018, the only thing the district court did was tax costs and disbursements, and both Rule 58 and Rule 104 say the judgment was final and should have been appealed on October 1st, 2018. So it's also respondent's position today that there is no jurisdiction in this case. Whether or not this court decides it has jurisdiction, respondent also still strongly feels that the decision regarding costs and disbursements should be affirmed.
All right. In the reply brief, the appellant makes the argument that you are basically conceding that your client was not entitled to attorney's fees.
So what that award was is it was $900 in attorney's fees and then actually $80 in costs associated with filing that appeal, a court administrator cost. And the district court did not cite any authority in its order for those costs and attorney's fees. But what I think that award of attorney's fees really reflects is that the district court strongly felt that there was no merit to appellant's position. And again, I think appellant's position on the costs and respondent's position on the costs and disbursements, I think that reflects that it's our position is strong.
But there was no Rule 11 motion made or anything.
Correct.
How did this come about? This is a sua sponte award by the court?
So in this case, I believe the attorney's fees so we had the decision from the court, the district court administrator, about the costs and disbursements. It was appealed. I believe respondent did submit what its attorney's fees and costs for responding to the motion were to the district court, and then the district court awarded them in the January 2019 order. But, Your Honor, you are correct that the district court did not cite any rule, didn't cite a Rule 11 or anything to support those attorney's fees or costs, and that was something the district court did in its discretion in its order. And so again, what I think that really reflects is just the district court was pointing out that it felt very strongly that appellant's position had no merit in this case. And
but I mean, what authority does there are a lot of arguments that the district court and even this court hears that we think have no merit. Does that mean, I mean, by what authority can attorney's fees be awarded without a Rule 11 motion or?
Yeah, and I am not aware of any authority, Your Honor. And so I would really just bring it back to today. Respondent is asking that the award of costs and disbursements be affirmed. The award of costs and disbursements be affirmed. To some extent, you could say that those $80, there was the $980, $80 of it was in fact costs, and the district court can tax and award those costs. So to some extent, you could say for sure those $80 could be affirmed. But respondent's position primarily today is that the costs and disbursements in general, it's that $5,400 should be affirmed just because those costs were in fact incurred by Corey Strecker. And at this time, I have nothing further, so unless there are any other questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I just want to be very clear that Strecker never incurred these costs because he's never liable for them. And the insurance contract is the document that prevents him from being liable for these costs. It says, State Farm, we're going to cover all these for you because you're paying insurance premiums.
Yeah, but can I stop you there, though? But my own experiences with insurance companies is they're not going to pay anything that they don't think that their insured is liable for.
Right.
And they're going to do everything they can to decrease the liability of the insured.
But this
isn't that.
These are litigation costs. These are costs for like an independent medical examination, exhibits and medical records, that kind of stuff. This isn't something that Mr. Strecker's liable for. If he had complete control over his insurance policy, he could say, let's just settle it for within my limits and not incur any costs.
But he would be liable for maintaining his own defense and maintaining and paying all these costs of litigation were it not for the fact he had this contract with someone else to pay these expenses.
Right, but the contract makes it so he's not liable for them. The contract absolves him of all liability or responsibility for these costs. State Farm is in the driver's seat here. It decides how much the costs are supposed to be, what the costs are going to be, and what the defense is going to be. Strecker doesn't do that.
And I thought of another situation, because I'm considering seriously your arguments, but another situation is these legal services contracts, and as I understand it, they'll pay everything, and that's what you pay premiums for. I mean, so that would affect those kind of cases too if we adopt.
What do you mean by a legal services contract?
Where you basically contract with someone to cover your legal expenses.
In that case, you would incur them because the contract would say you're liable for them after the case is resolved, regardless of the outcome of it. Here, regardless of the outcome, Corey Strecker is never responsible for the litigation costs State Farm incurs on his behalf.
No, but as I understand it, they defend you and
they do it at their own cost. That's what the policy says.
Right. So you'd be claiming that they wouldn't have the right of any kind of right to costs and disbursements either. So it goes beyond just auto insurance.
No, in the example of the litigation funding part of it, if that contract is enforceable, and there are cases that say certain ones are not, if that is enforceable, then the party did incur those costs because they're responsible for them regardless of the outcome of the case. In this case, Corey Strecker is never responsible for these costs, regardless of how the case shakes out. State Farm's not going to say, you owe us these costs when the case is over, or we won, now you have to pay these to us.
So long as he cooperates with the insurance company.
Right, and that wasn't at issue here, and that's not at issue at most liability cases. And where coverage is at issue, the insurance company would be a party, and then we wouldn't have this problem. As far as Headwaters goes, there are four or five reasons why it's not persuasive. It doesn't have a strict construction argument in it. It doesn't have the Duckowitz construction, which says the prevailing party must pay or incur these costs. It doesn't consider this reality about liability insurance. It adds by an insurer to this unambiguous language, which is a violation of statutory interpretation. And the staffing specifics case, it actually helps Kidda's position. In that case, everyone who taxed costs was a party and a prevailing party. So the gist of staffing specifics is if you're a prevailing party and you're liable for costs, you can tax them. State Farm was never a party to this case, and it was the only person who paid or incurred these costs. Unless the court has anything else, that's all I've got.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Very interesting arguments today, and we will take the matter under advisement and issue a decision within 90 days. Thank you.